talking to me?
Funny, like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead, make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Good morning. Today is April 11th, and this is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
How's everybody doing today?
Oh, we're great, Tom.
Fine.
Great.
Lovely.
Glad to hear it. Let's talk about movies, because that's what we do every week.
Oh, that's what we do. Okay.
Top 10 at the box office. How did Demolition do? I don't see it on this list.
There's quite a few films not shown up on the list or the charts even.
Yeah, I wonder, is Demolition even in the top 20, I wonder?
Mm. I didn't see it.
It opened pretty wide. And also,
Midnight Special.
Everybody wants some, but I thought that would open wider, but I guess it didn't.
Yeah, huh. I think Paramount's going to roll that out a little bit at a time.
Okay.
Everybody loves it.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
So here are the top 12 domestic weekend box office estimates as of Sunday, April 10th. At number one, The Boss claimed the top spot at the box office with $23.5 million, narrowly beating out number two, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. Warner Brothers movie brought in $23.4 million. The film had another solid weekend at the global box office in 68 territories as the superhero epic adds another $57.4 million.
So The Boss was number one?
Yes.
But it looks like it was pretty close.
Squeezed past.
Okay.
Between a point. Batman vs. Superman has earned $783.5 million to date. This lands the film a spot on the list of top 10 grossing superhero movies worldwide of all time.
Yeah. They last night on 60 Minutes, they did an interesting report about the film industry in China. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there's, I guess they probably scheduled that for a release there.
Yes.
I wonder if they might have added some special footage.
More and more films are debuting in China.
That's become quite the market, I understand, yes.
Which, speaking of The Huntsman, the new Huntsman movie coming, Winter's War, it already opened up already there this weekend to $20 million.
Yeah, it's not getting very good reviews either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a few posted already, huh?
Yeah. Variety had theirs.
But I was handing out Huntsman swag at the Tivoli over the weekend, and they gave me Jessica Chastain mints.
Well, I was going to say that the cast of that is impressive. Yeah, we'll be talking about that when it opens. What is it going to open before the end of April?
Friday, yes. A week from Friday.
A week from Friday.
But
no, you're right, Jim. The Chinese, the market over there, people just go to movies in droves. So
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if CBS.com has that report, but it's well worth checking out, I think. Mm.
They love Chris Hemsworth in China.
At number three is Zootopia from Disney. That brought in $14.4 million.
Yeah.
The film has seen $852.5 million worldwide, making it the 11th highest grossing animated film in history.
Wow.
The top 11.
I think it could crash the top 10 here in a couple of weeks.
So. I'm sure it will.
Falling off sharply at number four is My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2. Universal's movie brought in $6.4 million. At number five is Hardcore Henry. Film brought in $5.1 million in its opening weekend.
But I wonder how many of those people made it to the end of the film. Cool.
It just counts that they bought a ticket,
I guess. Exactly. It does.
Yeah.
Pretty good for a small little film like that. At number six, Miracles from Heaven. That brought in an additional $4.8 million. Another Christian-based film, God's Not Dead, Part 2, came in at number seven with $4.3 million. Number eight, the Divergent series Allegiant. Brought in $3.6 million. At number nine was Paramount Pictures' 10 Cloverfield Lane with $3 million. Still doing really well. At number 10, Eye in the Sky, starring Helen Mirren and Alan Rickman, brought in $2.8 million. And they still are promoting that really heavily to get people.
It's been really
well reviewed.
I think it's a triumph that it's still in the top 10. For a fairly intellectual, highbrow type film. That's pretty good.
But speaking of lowbrow, to be nice, to be kind, at number 11 is Meet the Blacks.
Yeah, we haven't seen that. So
I'm thinking I might try to take that. If it's sticking around through next weekend, I might have
to. Come on, judge the book.
If it's really a parody of The Purge, I
curious.
I thought it was maybe just a dopey version of Meet the Parents or something. But if it's it's tackling that film, that might be kind of amusing.
Just wait for it on Redbox. That movie came in at $2.3 million, and rounding out the 12 is Deadpool with $2.1 million. As we said before, Huntsman: Winter's War opened up overseas already and brought in $20 million in its first weekend. Opening next weekend on April 15th in cinemas is Barbershop: The Next Cut, starring Ice Cube, Common, Nicki Minaj. Criminal also will bow in theaters, starring Kevin Costner. And Disney's The Jungle Book, which has already opened up overseas.
That'll be number one.
To really great reviews, brought in $28.9 million in a number of Asian and Latin American territories.
Yes. But Criminal does have Mr. Deadpool himself in it, Mr. Ryan Reynolds.
That's got a great, and Gal Gadot.
And
Alice Eve.
You're reviewing that, right?
I am. I'm seeing it tomorrow night.
Okay.
I hope it's a good one.
Well, you know, it's a mind transference movie. Did you know that?
Well, yes. So I didn't know that. Brian should stay away from those.
Oh, yeah, I know.
After Selfless.
Selfless, yeah. He dies in Selfless. No.
Ben Kingsley
dies in Selfless, and his mind ends up in Ryan Reynolds' body. And apparently in Criminal, Ryan Reynolds dies, and his mind ends up in Kevin Costner's body.
Both from Lionsgate.
It's like The Hidden, I guess. They're just going to make sequel after sequel where just
Ryan
Reynolds' mind goes back.
Didn't that movie make a lot of... Didn't it make our top 10 worst?
Sure. Selfless? Yeah. Well, it was close to. Yeah,
it was pretty awful.
But they're going to keep doing it until they do it right, I guess. I hope it's good. Yeah, Kevin Costner's solo action films have been kind of hit and miss.
Yeah.
You know, that 3 Days to Kill or whatever.
That was bad. Yeah. And Black and White wasn't an action film, but it was pretty lousy. The one I really liked was McFarlane USA, as far as, Costner's comeback attempts of the past couple of years. That was a pretty good one.
Yeah, and he was a pretty good mentor to Chris Pine's character in the character Jack Ryan, I guess.
The reboot
of that series.
And Superman, he was fine.
Well, yeah.
He's Mr. Kent.
Kind of a dopey cameo in the new one there, but a lot of that's pretty dopey.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's start reviewing some movies. Jim reviewed The Boss.
You're under arrest for insider trading.
Michelle, don't struggle. Son of a bitch.
You're bankrupt. All your accounts have been frozen.
Claire, get me a new lawyer.
You don't have any money, you stupid ginger.
How many stars did you give it? 2?
I would think I gave it 2.5 or 3 or something like that. Okay. Yeah, I was a little more generous than a lot of the critics. I was surprised that it got such a low rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It's about 19%. I would have thought it would do a little better. This is, I think I'd mentioned, this is directed by her husband, and it's co-written by her and him and another fellow.
What's his name?
Ben Falcone.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Who's had a cameo in all of her films.
Yeah.
He was most memorable as the air marshal in Brian. It's made.
Right.
But this is slightly better than Tammy, but as I said in my review, this is the epitome of
faint praise.
Damning with faint praise.
They need to stop working together.
No. They're much better at running a household than they are in running a film, I think, together.
Do they have kids?
I think they got a couple of kids.
Two daughters.
Really? Yeah. They're about 8 and 11 or something like that. Yeah, it's a little better, like I say, than Tammy, because they're not trying to settle her with a love interest in this one, which is a good thing. No, they're not quite as hitting the heartstrings as much, although, as I mentioned in my review, there's usually a lull in comedies, usually around the hour mark that things starts to drag a little bit. And this is when they decide to, go for the pathos, go for the heartstrings and tugging at them and saying, Michelle Darnell, which is the character that Miss McCarthy plays in this, is a real human being, and all she wants really is love.
But see, that's what a lot of the critics, that's what their issue was that they soften her up, where they should have just kept her with that edge the whole time.
Yeah. Well, they try to, the opening scene sort of establishes that. It's a series, it says, 1975, and she's like a little 8-year-old, and she's being dropped off again at the Sisters of Mercy orphanage type place.
That was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's.
I saw it. I saw it Saturday night with my 12-year-old daughter, and it's a hard R. It had lots of filthy language.
I get
the worst parent of the year award.
Though my main problem with the Falcone and McCarthy pairings, as opposed to her pairings with Paul Feig doesn't mind giving jokes to everybody else, and it seems seemed like all the other characters didn't have a lot of really funny stuff to do. I'm surprised that they're hiding Peter Dinklage from the commercials and the ads. He's really the villain of this, and they try to make him a funny character, but
he's not funny.
He's not funny. He just is correcting people on his pronunciation. Yeah. And I think they think it's funny that his toady, his assistant, is played by Timothy Simmons, who's best known for the HBO show Veep, and he's close to 7 feet tall, and that's a gag in it for them. But there's not a whole lot. I know that Kristen Bell is a very funny actress. She was certainly very funny in the Veronica Mars TV show, and she's kind of the straight woman in this one. She's just kind of looking exasperated and aggravated and embarrassed until that probably one of the best scenes in the film, the big brassiere scene, which you see a lot of in the trailers. Her getting advice from Michelle on how to dress for her big date, but she's the one that's saddled with the love interest, and it's just a wimpy little rom-com-ish thing.
Yeah.
And it's certainly a waste of Tyler Labine, I think is the actor's name, and he's just kind of playing this eager, little guy, and he's like a little friendly puppy that just wants to, to get together with her, and it just doesn't work. He finally gets to cut loose a little bit in the last sequence.
But the last sequence is really awful. They break into Peter Dinklage's office building
because
it becomes this little caper thing, and it was terrible.
He doesn't believe in the internet and all that stuff. He keeps everything on paper, and he's this billionaire that does that. It's like, oh, really?
I saw it. I didn't think it was very funny. I would have probably given it maybe 2 out of 5. It starts out funny, but there is a really funny part, which you didn't mention, and there's two scenes where she goes and she crashes these Girl Scout meetings, and it's really, those are really funny scenes.
Well, you know what makes those funny is Annie Mumolo, the co-writer of Bridesmaids, as Helen, standing up to her, says, there's a convicted felon talking to our daffodils.
Yeah, and then there's this gag about Spaghetti the sick cat, and then she comes back to the second meeting, and Spaghetti the sick cat has died, and she says, well, she probably killed himself because you named it Spaghetti. And also, there's another actress in that scene you didn't mention, Kristen Schaal, who plays the leader of the Girl Scouts, and I recognized her from Walk in the Woods. She was the one holding up the toilet paper roll. She's really funny. I really burst out laughing in a couple of lines in that Girl Scout scene. And it was also funny when Melissa McCarthy recruits the Girl Scouts and starts her own troop, and they're going to go sell brownies, but they're going to keep the profits instead of the brownies. So the Girl Scouts selling the cookies and her troop selling the brownies, they meet and they get into this big fight in the street that kind of reminded me of this fight in Anchorman.
Well, that's one of the problems, I think, with the film, Tom, is that that sequence is pretty much all shown in the trailer. I mean, I think about 80% of the good jokes are in the trailer.
In the trailer, that doesn't bode well.
Yeah, which is sort of frustrating when you've seen the trailer a few times and you go to see the film. You're looking for more, on that. I kind of got tickled by, her group is called Darnell's Darlings, and she shows the Kristen Bell's character the logo, and it looks like something out of Communist China from the 1940s or something, with the red beret and the fist in the air and the whole thing. It's that's kind of amusing, but that's one of the few highbrow stuff in it. But it just kind of runs out of steam, and then they have this big she has a big falling out with the with her assistants and with the Darnell's Darlings, and it just kind of flops around until the big caper. They have to have like an Ocean's 11 type thing at the end, as you were saying, breaking into Renault's high rise,
and then they pull out swords and.
It just gets so ludicrous.
Did you prefer, which do you prefer, this or Tammy?
Oh, I prefer this over
Tammy.
This
is a little better than Tammy.
Yeah. Okay.
But was Tammy PG-13?
I think it might have been.
This was a hard, vulgar R.
The whole thing about her spray tanning is pretty rough. But also enjoyed. I'm blanking on the actor's name that plays her chauffeur. But he's only in the first half hour. I think the guy that's just agreeing to everything that she says and goes out of his way to put down the Kristen Bell character is very funny. But and like I say, Annie Mumolo is just got is at the same energy level as Melissa McCarthy, and they're really equals in those scenes. That's very good.
She's from TV.
Well, she's done some TV. Like I say, she co-wrote Bridesmaids, and she's done a few features. But
I've never seen her
really
before,
strong.
You're right; she was funny. So we don't think that The Boss is particularly funny, although it has its moments. Moving along, let's talk about Four Color Eulogy.
Color me afraid. Color me afraid of the changes.
How about them Cardinals?
Color me.
Four Color Eulogy was a movie shot here in St. Louis. It premiered at the St. Louis International Film Festival in 2014. It is
it a work in progress at
That's what I was going to say. I interviewed the director, Wyatt Weed. Full disclosure, Wyatt Weed is a good friend of mine. In fact, I'm going to his wedding this Saturday.
Oh, you lucky fellow.
Yes.
There.
I interviewed Wyatt Weed, so I had to watch, and it was kind of it was a work in progress. It didn't have all the music put in, and it was 2 hours and 15 minutes. The version that Jim saw Friday night was about 20 minutes shy of that, which I'm sure it made it much better paced. It's about a guy who lives, where does he live, in Portland or something?
He's living in Portland when the film starts, but he's transplanted to St. Louis.
Right, and he finds out his mother has cancer or she's on her last legs or something like that, and so he travels to St. Louis with his girlfriend and visits with his mom, and then there's a lot of cancer drama, and there's drama about who his father is, and but then he's a comic book writer, I believe.
Yeah, I believe so.
And he finds some comic book art, and he meets this older guy who works at a bar. And
he's a childhood friend, like he's a neighbor down the street.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's been a year and a half since I've seen it, and it turns out this guy is an old comic book artist.
Yeah, Jack King was the pseudonym that he used back then.
Yeah,
there's a lot of little tips of the hat to classic comic book creators.
Yeah,
in it.
And he's played by John Contini. John Contini's a local actor. He's really good in the film. John Contini is the older guy. I think his name was Rich. And John Contini, if you remember when we did Vincentennial in 2011, we brought John in, and there's a famous Vincent Price Evening with Edgar Allan Poe, which was a TV special in the 70s. And Vincent Price came out and did this one-man act where he acted out four Edgar Allan Poe stories. So we had John Contini come and reproduce some of those on Vincent Price's 100th birthday at the Missouri History Museum. Before Vincent Price's daughter spoke, John Contini came out and did The Telltale Heart, but he was sort of channeling Vincent Price doing it. So it's a little of an aside, but John Contini's a really good local actor. He won the Kevin Kline Award a couple years ago for a one-man John Barrymore show that he did. So there's a lot of local talent involved in this film. I wish they would have sort of boosted up the comic book references and the comic book elements and sort of played down the family cancer drama a little bit. It was a bit talky. But like I say, it's a little hard for me to review because I saw a version that was a good 20 minutes longer than what you saw, so maybe they cut some of that down. I don't know. What did you think, Jim?
I think you're right. I think that might have been stronger to concentrate a bit more on that. It seems a lot of times the characters are sitting around drinking, either around an open pit fire in the backyard or at the bar that Rich owns now. Some of it is a tad talky, but I did like some of the scenes in the comic book shop. I enjoyed those, and the whole collaborating on the revival of the characters. I think it's Captain Arabia and the Prince Lance or something like that is the comic book that Jack King had done. Yeah, it was fairly well done, and pretty entertaining, I would say. Yeah,
you got to keep in mind this movie cost $15,000 to make.
That's quite an accomplishment.
That's like
to get
that lunch budget for one day of a big studio film.
Is there a score?
There's music by local musicians.
Oh, good.
Yes, actually, the actor or the singer songwriter that sings the opening title theme song, Color Me, like Amy Pitts? Taylor Pitts, I'm sorry. Yeah. She has a small role in the film also as the bartender at Rich's Pub. So, that's a nice little peppy tune.
I mean, it's really professionally done. It's very slick. Even the shots where Jason Contini and his girlfriend are driving back from Portland to St. Louis, they could have just gone out to 44 and filmed them in the car, but they actually went in and did a green screen, and they actually had a you know, Western state scenery going by outside the window of his car. So they really put a lot into the film. It looks like a you know, it looks like a good, you know, $500,000 or $1 million production.
Yeah, it looks like an indie that we would see at one of the Landmark theaters, something like that. Yeah.
Are they going to try to get it into more film festivals?
It may have run its courses in terms of film festivals. I'm not 100% sure. I do know they had a big red carpet premiere Friday night, and Jim went to that, didn't you?
I did. I was at that. That was nice. They did a very interesting Q&A after the film.
Where was it under Jason and Wyatt?
Yeah, pretty much the whole cast was there, John and Jason, and it was it was fairly pretty impressive.
And that was sold out too.
That was. And as far as I understand, it's going to have two showings a day at least through Thursday over at Ronnie's 20.
Yeah, so. And my friend Marianne went on Saturday, and she said the Saturday matinee, or maybe it was Sunday matinee, was like sold out. So
they're good.
Wyatt and Gail are really good at self promotion and marketing their stuff. And I wouldn't be surprised if Wehrenberg even holds it over a second week if it continues to do well. So congratulations to those guys.
Yeah, they have a lot of passion for their work, and it's you could, like I say, you could tell every penny's on the screen there.
Yeah.
And it's very well done.
So go see Four Color Eulogy and support local filmmakers.
Yeah.
Okay, now we got to review Hardcore Henry.
The shoot! Hold the shoot! Hold on, Henry! Henry, fight back! You're capable of more than you think! Henry!
It's all right. I'm here to help you. Is your speech module installed? But at least we know you're not deaf.
Did you guys see Hardcore Henry?
Afraid not.
Michelle, did you see it?
No.
No. I saw it, but I really didn't see it. Hardcore Henry is a new action sci-fi movie, and it's all told in...
Video game.
Yeah, sort of...
Well, in GoPro.
Yeah, GoPro, but it's all first person. What you see throughout the entire film is this action film from the perspective of this fellow named Henry, who doesn't talk... but he sure shoots a lot and runs around a lot and gets shot at. It's all very shaky. About 10 minutes into this film, I started feeling a little queasy. And at the 40-minute mark, I had to leave. I was afraid I was going to puke all over Kate Markey, who was sitting next to me. And she would not have appreciated that.
Yeah, she mentioned the film Dark Passage as sort of an inspiration for that. That was the Bogart Bacall film, where the first half is pretty much told out of his eyes.
Well, there's Lady in the Lake.
That was where Robert Montgomery. Yeah,
you're right. And in the movie, Hardcore Henry, he goes into this guy's apartment, and there's a poster for Lady in the Lake on the wall.
There you go.
I don't know how many people picked up on that. A little Easter egg, but I did. Yeah, I don't know if it's any good or not. It's like, if you see the trailer, it's like that for 90 minutes. And I felt like kind of a wimp getting so sick at this thing, but I actually went over to Allied Friday to pick up some swag to hand out over the weekend, and Ian over there and Colleen both said they had the same reaction. Colleen said she lasted 30 minutes. She lasted less than I did, and Ian said he lasted about an hour, and they both had to walk out too, and they're a lot younger than me, so that may feel a little better. but Kate Markey at Weird Movie Geeks, she must have a cast iron stomach, because she sat through the whole 90 minutes, and she gave it a fairly positive review.
I think she gave it
3.5 out of 5 stars. So if you can stomach it, maybe I recommend Hardcore Henry. I really can't say, because I'm not going to review a movie I only saw less than half of.
But as I understand that he's Henry himself as part of some experiment that he had been brought. Was he brought back to life?
He had been injured terribly, and some of his limbs had been blown off. So it opens with him waking up in a tub of water, and his fiance is played by Haley Bennett, is sort of helping him. She's like screwing his foot on and his arm on.
I wonder where you're going with that.
Yeah.
She's screwing his foot on.
Yeah. Get your mind out of the gutter. And then Charlton Copley plays this guy who's sort of leading him on this adventure. But, you know, the running gag is Charlton Copley keeps getting killed, but he keeps coming back to life. And I don't know how that played out, because I didn't see the rest of it. He's a good actor, Charlton Copley. Wasn't he in District 9?
The A-Team.
And, I really like him.
Spike Lee's Old Boy remake. He was the villain in that. So he's a good supporting actor, and he's sort of the humor and really the voice of the film, because Henry doesn't talk. So maybe go see Hardcore Henry. I will never see it on the big screen. Maybe when it comes to Redbox, I'll try to watch it on a small television and see how it plays out. We can't really recommend it, but we can't not recommend it either. All right, let's move along.
Yes,
Midnight Special.
I think you're a weapon. Captain Wrench thinks you're their savior.
Special.
It's fantastic.
Says Michelle. Jim, did you think it was fantastic?
I think a lot of it is really good. Yeah.
It's a good movie.
That's excellent.
We saw it. They didn't show it to us, though.
And it
wouldn't have gotten reviewed at all at our site, except young Stephen Tronicek, who's one of our contributing writers, saw it over the weekend, as did we, and he put up a review last night and gave it 5 out of 5 stars.
And it's got great reviews.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't show it to us. It's probably a studio thing.
Well,
yeah, we got to see Jeff Nichols' other films.
Right,
yeah.
Mud and Shelter. But Jim and I were thinking that because of the big surprise reveal at the end, that they didn't want critics to give that. And even the reviews that, out of like the Berlin Film Festival didn't give, the surprise ending away.
Well, that's being a professional.
Exactly.
You don't do that, Why would they think that we would do that?
I didn't think the ending was that much of a surprise.
If you just let yourself really get into the movie, I just loved it. I love the way the reveal came. Acting, the cinematography was great.
I like the
score.
Way they sort of dropped you into the story, and it's sort of like dropping you in the middle of the story. There was no setup. It was
saying, catch up with us here.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was so well done.
It was very well done and very well acted. I guess my problem with it, and I would have given it probably 3.5 out of 5, maybe.
No.
I just thought I think it didn't add up to a whole lot. It was just kind of much ado about nothing when all was said and done. It started out more interesting than it ended, and they had all this stuff with the ranch, and Sam Shepard is the leader of the ranch, and that was sort of fascinating because this kid who they're all searching for, who's been snatched from the ramp, is some sort of messiah to these people in the ranch, and the women dress like they're Amish or something. And I would have liked to have gone back to the ranch. Sam Shepard never reappears in the movie; just becomes this chase.
Yeah, well, his assistants doing that.
Side story. To the actual, this director really loved 70s and 80s.
That was more interesting than where it eventually went. They bred in the mothership, and it's all very Spielberg-esque, and it looks like the art director from Tomorrowland was brought in there.
I was thinking Tomorrowland when I saw it.
It's very Starman-like also. It's more Starman-like.
Yeah, but I just thought where it went wasn't particularly satisfying, although it was a lot of fun getting there.
Even with its, even with its supernatural overtones, I think at the heart, the director writer Nichols was trying to get that trust, love between a parent and child. So it was more about, their story and them letting them go, the parents letting him go at the end. One of the highlights, I really loved the acting by Adam Driver. I love the addition of his character.
The Joel Edgerton character doesn't make a whole lot of sense either. You don't really understand quite why he's so intensely devoted to
when he saw the boy and saw the white, the connection, he immediately signed on.
Yeah, but boy, he's really going above and beyond things to help help them out. That's for certain.
I was glad to see Joel Edgerton, and I really like him.
It's a pleasure to see all the actors
on
screen.
The ensemble cast was phenomenal.
Especially Michael Shannon, who's always fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're going to get to see later on today, so that's going to be nice.
I hope people find this movie. I really do. I think it's an excellent movie. I think it's one of the best. Right now, I could say it'll be on my top 10 list because I really liked it that much.
Well, I say it's a. Mm-hmm. It'll be a contender in the 20 for me. That's for sure.
It'll be a contender in the 35 for me.
And
it'll be
in
my top 35.
Steven's review was dead on. I would have given it the 5 stars. I liked it that much. Yeah. Jim and I saw it. I was gushing.
I would have given it 3.5. How many stars would you have given it, Jim?
Oh, I probably would have given it a solid 4, maybe 4.5.
All right. Yeah. So we all admire Midnight Special. You guys want anything more about it? You can.
I just think it's excellent. I think people need to go see it. See it. Maybe watch it one spot or one trailer, but then try to go into it without knowing too much because by the end, you'll be happy you did.
Yeah, right. The young man in it, I forget his name. He's very good in it. He was in St.
Vincent.
Oh, that kid.
He reminded me of a young Tobey Maguire, which I thought was funny because his mother is Kirsten Dunst in it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this is Peter Parker's young son or something.
His name is Jaden Lieberhauer.
Yeah, yeah, he's good.
Yeah, right. He was very good.
Here's a scene at a gas station that's really, really interesting. Yeah.
Very suspenseful. All right, so we like Midnight Special. Michelle loves it.
Go see it.
Jim likes it a lot, and I like it a
lot. Michelle wishes she could marry it.
That's right.
Yeah, I do. It's one of those just
pleasant.
Then
she'd be Mrs. Midnight Special.
It was just one of those pleasant surprises. I
hope it does well. Speaking of Michael Shannon, Jim is going to see Elvis versus Nixon, or Elvis meets Nixon. Elvis meets Nixon.
I think that might be more in Elvis versus Nixon.
Everybody loves Elvis.
Call me.
He could really help us with the youth vote. He would also like a badge.
A what?
I would like to go undercover as a federal agent. I've been in 31 major motion pictures. That makes me an expert in costume and disguise.
I could infiltrate the communists, and then I'd bust them all.
Let's do this thing.
An undercover rock and roller sounds ludicrous.
I can supply my own firearm.
I tell you what, I watched the trailer for Elvis, and Michael Shannon is terribly cast as Elvis. Physically, Elvis had soft features and dreamy eyes and big lips. Michael Shannon has thin lips and coarse features. He looks like the scary Elvis.
Yeah.
And he's not even doing the voice. He's doing Michael Shannon's voice. I'm not judging this movie because I haven't seen it. And maybe it's really good. You know, a lack of resemblance isn't necessarily a problem. A really great actor can overcome that. But he's going to have a hill to climb there. It's really distracting in the trailer. But we'll see. Jim will, I guess, be back next week to review it.
Yeah. I'm trying to keep an open mind with it. I think I'm interested to see Spacey's take on Nixon.
Nixon, yeah, he looks a little better. I mean, he's put on makeup and he's doing a Nixon imitation. He looks more like him than Anthony Hopkins did back
then. Yeah, and certainly the midpoint of that film, you bought that he was Nixon, that Anthony Hopkins was Nixon. So,
yeah, and this looks like a comedy or a satire, and we'll see. There was an Elvis Meets Nixon made-for-TV movie about 25 years ago. Yeah, I remember that being really good.
Yeah, did Bob Gunn play Nixon in that one?
I don't remember.
I can't remember the young actor that played Elvis said it, but it was very entertaining.
Yeah.
And that's a heck of a photo that it's based on.
Oh, yeah. So Jim will be seeing that, and maybe Michelle and I will see it too. You never know. And then Jim also gets to see tonight Barbershop, the next cut.
Oh, lucky me.
Me and Angie, we was both struggling to keep our shops afloat, so we had to work together.
Saved us both.
I can't believe y'all put all that money on your heads and then don't be having the money for your rent.
With this here and this booty.
Damn.
It's like walking around with a black Amex.
I guess the third in the Barbershop series, directed and starring Ice Cube. I saw the first one and thought it was great, and then I saw the second one and thought it was kind of lousy, so maybe this
third the first one's delightful. It really is. I agree.
See, and I have seen none of them, so I'm coming in with completely fresh
eyes. What?
So that's right.
Jim will be, look for Jim's review of Barbershop. You're reviewing Barbershop, I assume.
Yes, I guess I'm the only one seeing it.
Thursday night. I won't be seeing Jungle Book. But you guys will. Okay, tomorrow.
I think Michael will be there. Yeah.
Okay, and that's going to be on the IMAX and 3D, and that's this big, lush,
the reviews. Have you seen the early reviews?
No, I haven't.
If you can't learn to run with the pack, one of these days you'll be someone's dinner.
I can't help but notice there's this strange odor today. Man is forbidden!
I think Bill Murray does the voice of the bear, and Lupita Nyong'o is in there.
And Idris Elba, Shere Khan. Right.
And Scarlett Johansson sounding like a sexy slithering snake. Yes.
Oh, she plays Ka. Ooh.
Okay. Well, Jim will... Are you reviewing that one?
No, I think Michael is.
Okay, Michael's reviewing, so look for Michael's review of Jungle Book Thursday night at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. I won't be saying that because I will be saying Criminal.
Who are you?
They stopped your husband in my head. They're looking for details that he knew before he was killed.
Washington, Berlin, Beijing would be graveyards.
Can you feel what Billy felt?
He loves you so much.
Criminal stars Kevin Costner and Tommy Lee Jones and Ryan Reynolds and Gal Gadot and Alice Eve. It's got a heck of a cast. It's a mind transference thing, which Ryan Reynolds starred in. What was the one last year?
Selfless. Which I think was Lionsgate Summit, wasn't
it? Was it?
I believe.
Something like that.
You think Ryan Reynolds would know better. I'll be reviewing that one. I don't know what to think, but I'll keep an open mind. And,
almost like him doing another Green Lantern or something.
At least this was rated R. Selfless was PG-13. So maybe it has some violence or nudity or something to keep me awake. But we'll see. I'll let you know. Look for my review of Criminal Thursday night at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Lots of local stuff going on. I went to this movie theater yesterday in New Haven, Missouri.
Oh, I was going to ask how that went.
And saw a great Buster Keaton movie, which I had never seen before, called Go West. And it had live music by the Rats and People Motion Picture Orchestra. It was really good.
Oh, yeah.
It's not one of his, you know, as far as funny gags, it's maybe not one of his very best movies, but it had a lot of heart. It's about this old guy named Friendless. I almost said Selfless again. And nobody likes this guy, so he befriends this cow named Brown Eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And Brown Eyes is headed off to slaughter, and he spends the whole movie saving Brown Eyes, and they end up in the... He ends up derailing the cattle car in the big city, and this herd of cattle is running through the city. So it does have a lot of physical Buster Keaton-type gags. Really good. And then, of course, the Rats and People Motion Picture Orchestra did a great job. Rats and People Motion Picture Orchestra will be playing again. They're going to be accompanying Wildcat. Have you ever seen that?
It's an
Ernst Lubitsch film from 1921 starring Pola Negri.
Oh, really? Okay. That sounds interesting.
I don't know the exact date yet. It's going to be the weekend of May 20th, and it's part of the Show Me Burlesque convention that they do here and every year, which is a big deal. They get hundreds of people show up for that. That'll be at this bar called 2720, which is on Cherokee, but it's this huge art space.
And Polo, along with Velma Banky, were like the vamps of silent films, right? Yeah.
And that's why it fits into the burlesque show, I guess.
Yeah.
So look for that. Not going to announce right now. I will be teaming up again with Rats and People Motion Picture Orchestra, and this is far off. It's going to be September 28th, which is a Wednesday night. I'm redoing my tribute to King Bagot, and I'm doing it at the Missouri History Museum. And we are showing the 1913 version of Ivanhoe again with live music by the Rats and People Motion Picture Orchestra, and I will be delivering a lecture that's about a 40-minute long lecture on the life and career of King Bagot. King Bagot was a silent film star from St. Louis who I think deserves a star on the St. Louis Walk of Fame.
Or if you'll be doing the translation again also.
No, I won't. We've actually got this is a DVD this time. When I did this presentation at the St. Louis International Film Festival a year and a half ago, we showed a 35mm print that had Dutch intertitles. We've actually got that transferred to DVD now with English titles burned over the Dutch intertitles. So I don't have to stand there at the podium and translate the thing like I did last time. So I'll be talking about that until you guys are sick of hearing about it. Other stuff, my 16mm night, May 3rd, is Poseidon Adventure and Jason and the Argonauts. I talked about that. Mm-hmm. This weekend at the Tivoli, midnight show at the Tivoli, Labyrinth, starring David Bowie and Jennifer Connelly. I saw that for the first time a couple months ago when we showed it at Tenacious E. Also, The Iron Giant.
Oh.
What are we looking at here, Mr. Manley? This is no meteor. This is something much more serious.
Invaders from Mars.
Ever seen that, Jim?
Yay.
Ever seen that?
Jim and I love that movie.
That is
that's a fabulous movie.
That's one of my favorite films.
The story, the music, it's just such a throwback to old animation. Okay,
this Friday night at 9 o'clock at Webster Hughes Moore Auditorium.
Yeah, I remember seeing it in a midnight show at the Tivoli a few years ago and got a good crowd. So, if you got a chance to see it on the big screen, definitely go.
Yeah. And did you know that there's two movies over at the Keller right now that both star Anna Kendrick, and they're both rated R.
Really?
Yeah. One's called Get a Job. You heard of it?
I've seen that listed in the ads. I wonder what that was.
It's Miles Teller and Anna Kendrick. And
We ran a contest for it.
Keller needs to do a better job of promoting their stuff, because they get these movies, and they're exclusive, and nobody knows they're in town. I saw one a couple months ago called Heist with Robert De Niro, and I was the only person in the audience, myself and a friend of mine.
Now, is the other one with her, is that the one with Sam Rockwell?
Yes, it's called Mr. Right, and it's like a gangster comedy or something like that. But neither of these movies have gotten very good reviews. So
Kendrick and Rockwell have been appearing on talk shows promoting it, but I assumed that it was going to be like a video on demand only thing, but it is playing at a theater here in town.
Yes, at the Keller, which is out in South County. I did do my speech last week at the Missouri History Museum on the best black dresses in the movies. That was a lot of fun, and I'll be turning that into an article, which I'll put up at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Next week, I will be speaking again at the museum, Missouri History Museum, June 2nd, and the subject will be drive-in movie theaters in St. Louis.
Oh.
That no longer exist. None exist. So I'll be doing a history of the drive-in movie theater in St. Louis.
Also in the news was more Star Wars news. There was Doctor Strange news. There was Suicide Squad. Jim, what should we start with?
I think Rogue One is a good one to start with.
Yes. Disney premiered the new trailer for Rogue One, a Star Wars story, as it's being officially called now.
Yeah, a lot of confusion about that. I had a couple of people, an old college buddy, say, now this has, you know, is the further adventures of Finn and Rey and all that. I said, no, this is a prequel in the purest sense of the word.
It is.
And this occurs before the 1977 original. I guess we'd call it Episode 4, A New Hope.
Yes.
And it's kind of a throwaway line in that, in which one of the rebel leaders says, you know, a lot of people gave their lives to get the plans to the Death Star, mm-hmm. and this is about the group that goes out to steal those plans.
And who loses their lives, and as we found out in the process.
Who's in this?
Oh, Felicity Jones, I guess, is the leader of it. And, of course, a lot of fanboys are complaining, oh, no, not another strong female character movie. And I'm like, oh, shut up.
It's awesome. Ben Mendelsohn is in it. That was one of the four things that I took away from the trailer. The, like you had said, Felicity Jones, Ben Mendelsohn as the bad guy. Oh, did you see that?
Rings a bell. Who's Ben Mendelsohn?
Oh, Ben has been kicking around a while. He was in that gambling movie with Ryan Reynolds at Mississippi Grind, I believe is what it was called. He was one of the two inept hitmen that
he was in
Brad
the Dark
Pitt
Knight
takes.
Rises.
Yeah, Brad Pitt takes out in
Killing
Them Softly.
Okay,
The Place Beyond the Pines. So to see him as the bad guy, you know, just. Chills. And we saw Mads Mikkelsen.
Well, Mads Mikkelsen, I was surprised at seeing Forrest Whitaker in it. That was my biggest surprise. I know I had heard somewhere that he was involved in it, but it looks like he's a major player in it. He's maybe a mentor to Felicity Jones in it, I'm guessing.
I think so. We saw, you know, to see Vader.
Well, people think that's Vader.
I think it is.
I don't know.
This is like in the true Star Wars vein. We saw the ships. We saw the walkers from Empire.
AT-ATs, yeah. We even saw one of the droids from the little square-boxed one that Uncle Owen almost buys.
Right. It's an exciting trailer. It's really
well
cut.
When's that open?
December.
December. Okay.
So we have a Star Wars universe movie from here to, like, what is it, 2019?
Every year. It is really wild.
But this looks phenomenal. I'm very excited about this one.
Who directed it?
Gareth Edwards, is that his name?
Oh, yeah.
Who did Godzilla?
He did Monster.
Monster and then Godzilla, and he's prepping Godzilla,
better
too.
Than Godzilla.
Speaking of Star Wars, the MTV Movie Awards were held this weekend, over the weekend, and the three prizes went to Star Wars Force Awakens.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The three main prizes there?
The three main ones. And speaking of MTV Movie Awards, a new explosive trailer was shown for Suicide Squad from Warner Brothers Pictures. The footage showed new characters. I think we saw a little bit of Jared Leto from what I can see.
Well, we've seen some of him, you know, in the previous trailer.
But there was more of the bad guys. There was a lot more of Margot.
Robbie.
Thank you.
Robbie,
yeah. So we saw a lot more of her.
I'd like to see more of her.
So the trailer just, I think it looks phenomenal. I cannot wait for this movie. It opens up in August.
I know they've been doing a lot of reshoots lately on it.
They have beefed up the
Deadpool type stuff.
Correct.
Yeah. Normally that's not a good sign, but I think in this case it's be something to worry about.
You know, with a lot of ties to Batman versus Superman.
Well, the last trailer I saw actually showed Batman leaping on top of the car that's driven by the Joker and Harley Quinn.
Uh-huh.
So we'll get to see Ben Affleck as Batman again in just a couple of months.
Right.
So,
and one thing Jim and I were talking about, Marvel's Doctor Strange.
Oh, boy.
It's been reported, The Wrap, I first saw it at TheWrap.com, that the first trailer will premiere during Jimmy Kimmel Live's week-long salute to Captain America.
It starts tonight, I guess, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So they'll be premiering that tomorrow night, and they'll have, they'll even have Chris Hemsworth on there. I know they won't have any footage from Ragnarok because they're, I don't know if they're actually shooting that yet or if that's still in pre-production.
I think
he might talk a little bit about that. So
that's Thor 3?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be pretty much a buddy film with Thor and the Hulk, I think.
But Tom, have you seen any of the first stills out of New York City where they're shooting Doctor Strange?
I saw some picture of Benedict walking down the road with somebody.
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah.
Right.
Your old buddy, yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But Jim and I got a kick out of the story where he went into the comic book store and actually bought a comic book.
Yeah, and he took a photo of him holding up the comic book up to his face.
Yeah. Was it a Doctor Strange comic
book?
Yeah, in full
costume.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's funny.
Wonderful.
Yeah, all right, yeah. Well, we like Benedict Cumberbatch, and we look forward to seeing Doctor Strange. Any other trailers you guys want to talk about?
I think that's the big news this week. Yeah.
The movie coming out this summer, the animated film Life of Pets, it released a bunch of fun new posters and trailer, and today is National Pet Day.
Oh, well, I'll go home.
So I just thought I'd throw that in.
I'll go home and kick my cat.
No, you'll pet your cat. Yeah,
exactly.
My cat hates me.
But that's it for the big trailer news from last week.
All right.
Well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, you wanted to talk about funny ladies in the movies. Who's the funniest lady in the movie today? Is it Melissa McCarthy? She's certainly the big comedian.
She is the queen of comedy, and she, you know, one of the things I wanted to mention in the review earlier, she really commits. She just throws herself into these roles, and it's to be admired. But she's from a long tradition of funny ladies in the movies. I think we could probably date it all the way back to the silent era with Mabel Normand, who I guess originally started out as sort of a foil, the gal to be rescued by Charlie Chaplin, and turned out to be a very, very funny comedian on her own, as did Marion Davies, who started out in the silence, who actually preferred being in comedies, but her mentor, her muse, William Randolph Hearst, wanted her to be thought of as a serious actress. What was that, the film, was it called The Cat's Meow, that was all about that fateful boat trip with Kristen Dunst?
Yeah,
as,
the Thomas Ince murder.
Yeah, that's something you should look for, maybe if it's streaming, that might give a little more background on
Peter Bogdanovich directed it.
That's right. Yeah, and it's Chaplin's one of the characters
Chaplin
in it.
Chaplin was played by Eddie Izzard.
That's right. Yeah. It was a very entertaining film, I thought. And getting into the sound era, I think the queen of comedy in the 30s and into the early 40s is probably Carol Lombard. Mm-hmm. She had a heck of a career.
Her timing.
Oh, my goodness.
Wasn't it great?
Yeah, Nothing Sacred, which I think may still be in the public domain, as is My Man Godfrey.
Yeah. And was she kind of killed at the peak of her career?
She was probably I don't know if it was right before the release of maybe her greatest screen comedy, To Be or Not to Be.
Yes.
And I recall seeing that maybe about 30 or 40 years ago when I was in college, and literally when she first appears on screen, people were gasping because it looks so like an angel right from heaven.
Doesn't she?
And she's just gorgeous, and she's so funny in it.
And she was married to
Clark Gable, and supposedly she could out-curse a whole fleet of sailors.
You remember that movie? Remember they made a movie called Gable and Lombard? And
with it was Jill
and James Brolin.
Yeah,
Clayburgh. I don't think it's considered to be a very good movie.
No, not one of the classics. Now, a lot of people forget in the 30s there was a female comedy team from Hal Roach Studios, the people that brought out Laurel and Hardy and Our Gang. He decided he wanted to, Hal Roach did, to establish this team. And it started out with the beautiful Thelma Todd, the blonde screen queen you might remember from two of the Marx Brothers films. Mm-hmm. It was just also drop-dead gorgeous. Teamed her with Zazu Pitts, who'd had a little bit of a career as a character actress up till that point.
Yeah, she was in Greed, Yvonne Stroheim's Greed. Yeah. But that was a heavy drama.
Yeah. She might be best known as being the inspiration for Olive Oil, that Mae Questel was kind of doing a takeoff of Zazu Pitts' voice to play Olive Oil. Yeah. And when she left this the short series, she was replaced by Patsy Kelly, another great screen comic actress, who was ended up being the first Alice Cramden when Jackie Gleason started doing the Honeymooners sketches on television, and then ended up playing Alice Cramden's mother later on in the series. So those are great little shorts that every once in a while pop up on Turner Classic movies.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're talking about the 40s, we also want to mention Eve Arden, who was a great, usually a sidekick of the main character.
I love her.
So funny in Mildred Pierce. There's a great scene. Jack Carson is kind of lusting after Joan Crawford's character through a lot of it until he sees Eve Arden, and he's looking her up and down, and Eve looks at him and goes, "Burr, leave me some clothes, will you?" or something along those lines. And she's very funny. This is prior to her establishing herself as a comedic actress in other media, specifically Our Miss Brooks on the radio.
I was going to ask you
and
that.
Then on television. Speaking of television superstars, a lot of people forget that Lucille Ball also did motion pictures.
She did.
Remember I showed, what was it, the Fuller Brush Girl?
Fuller Brush Girl.
Super 8 show.
Gotcha.
And with Eddie Albert, and I think around the same time she did Miss Grant Takes Richmond with William Holden. And
even, she was in a Three Stooges show.
Yeah, she was in Three Little Pigskins, yeah. I think is that one. And she appeared with the Marx Brothers in Room Service. And I think she did a movie with Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. I think Merrily We Roll Along is maybe what it's called. But even at MGM, when they were establishing her as sort of a glamour queen, she got some funny roles. And specifically, Du Barry Was a Lady with Gene Kelly and Red Skelton. Mm-hmm. Great scenes with him. And later on, I guess it was the film that she met her future husband. Was it Best Foot Forward, I think, mm-hmm. where she meets young Desi. And and then once she was established on television, MGM signed her and Desi up to do a couple of feature films. They did The Long, Long Trailer.
I love that movie. And they show that once a year, and I try to catch that, or at least DVR.
It's kind of ahead of its time.
Yeah, that's true. And then they follow that up with, I think it's called Forever Darling, with James Mason as a sort of an angel that comes out down to help them with their marriage.
Yes.
But, so she was, and then she did a couple of films with Bob Hope. She did, can't recall, I think it's called Buttons and Bows. I'm starting to think it's a Western. Mm-hmm. But she also she does one where they're having a fling. They're an old married couple, married to different people. So that was another film kind of ahead of its time. And then later on she did Mame,
I never saw Mame. That was a musical.
That was a lot, but there were some funny moments in that. But, of course, getting into the 60s, I think you want to talk a little bit about Marilyn Monroe, how funny she is in Some Like It Hot. She's very funny in that. She's, of course, hysterical in 7-Year Itch, which is a great movie.
How to Marry a Millionaire.
Very funny in that. Very funny in Bus Stop, even though that's more of a dramatic film.
A fine comedian, Miss Monroe.
Oh, yeah. But I think when Marilyn left the scene in the early 60s, the screen comedies were kind of taken over by Doris Day, who was very funny in some of the films. Yeah, she does a lot of slapstick, I recall, in the Glass Bottom Boat is one. Mm. And she actually sort of remade or restarted a film that Marilyn had started. Marilyn was going to do a remake of My Favorite Wife called Something's Gotta Give with Dean Martin. And when she passed away during the making of that, they remounted it a few years later with Doris Day and James Garner in those roles.
And Tura Santana is in that. She plays a dancer.
Yeah. Also around this time, Shirley MacLaine was coming into her own as a screen star in a couple of her films. Irma LaDuce also with Tura Santana.
That's right. And Artists and Models.
Artists and Models with Martin.
That was one of the black dresses I showed at the Missouri History Museum, was that sort of proto Batgirl outfit that she wears in that film.
This segues into Four Color Eulogy, because Artists and Models is set in the world of comic books also. Uh-huh. And it's really funny.
That's my favorite Lewis Martin movie. Frank Cashlin directed that.
A terrific, terrific film. Started getting into the 70s, you get a lot of people coming over from television like Goldie Hawn, who won an Oscar for her first film, Cactus Flower. With the opposite Walter Matthau, and later went on to do Foul Play, which was Chevy Chase's first feature film.
Old Times.
Yeah, Benjamin, she was nominated for
Private
that.
Private Benjamin is a big one with her. Uh-huh. And it seemed like a lot of the Saturday Night Live ladies weren't really transferring that well, although Gilda did a couple of films that never really took off as a big screen star. Although if you can catch the film version of her stage play, Gilda Live, that's very entertaining.
Mike Nichols, I believe, directed it.
That's right. And I think Paul Schaefer is in that as the musical director. And I don't think it was really until 2011's Bridesmaids that you really had a huge, huge hit with some of the ladies from SNL and establishing not only Melissa McCarthy as a major comic force, but also Rebel Wilson, who has a small role in that,
she's funny.
She's funny. She went on to pretty much be the main selling point of the Pitch Perfect.
Yeah. Pitch Perfect, right.
She had my favorite line in Bridesmaids where Kristen Wiig says, "I can't believe you read my diary." And she goes, "I didn't realize it was your diary. I just thought it was a very sad handwritten book." Well, we've got to wrap it up. So Jim's point is that Melissa McCarthy's not the first funny woman on the big screen. There's been plenty to precede her. But we're going to have to wrap it up for now. But we're going to be back next week. We're going to review Jungle Book and Barbershop, The Next Cut, and Criminal, and maybe Elvis Meets Nixon, not Elvis versus Nixon. And there'll probably be a couple more movies, and we'll talk about other stuff. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Betts.
And listen to us again next week.
Black leather, rock. rock. Black leather, black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather, black leather.
Oh, nice, Dave. Hello, darling.
Black leather, black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock.